This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast is sponsored by Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen, located only 30 seconds from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie for free on match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round. And to get fired in with our exclusive discount code, head to the bar and quote ABZPOD for a £3 pint of Foster's, a £4 pint of Moretti or Dark Fruits, or £5 for a pint of Fierce or Adake. That's any day of the week, including match days. And if you're with the little ones and are looking for a spot of pre or post match lunch, remember, under 18s are welcome in the bar with an adult, so make a day of it at Siberia. Come on, you Reds.
Red slight of foot there. Bakashina!
Hello and welcome along to episode 167 of the ABZ Football Podcast. I'm Gary Scott. Joining me this week is a man who's been lashed in the balls. It's Gavin J. Baxter. Gav, how are you?
Yes, with absolutely no right to be in that situation either. Yes, very well, thank you. Yes, relieved to say the very least that I know it's not mathematically done yet, but I feel like Scottish Premiership status has been secured. And I'm feeling awfully relieved about it.
What a season. No Graham Steele again this week, unfortunately. Graham still recovering after a heavy weekend of celebrating Bucky Thistle's silent league championship win the week prior. And then commiserating, obviously, off the back of the fact that they're not getting to play their playoff game. So lovely stuff.
Yes, commiserating.
Fair fucks to the SFA for this one, on account of the fact that Bucky Thistle continually refused to publish their team lines up until the last few weeks of the season. So get it fucking right round yous. Anywho. On this week's show, we'll look back on the Dons' 1-0 win over Motherwell on Saturday in the Cinch, as Gav's just talked about. We'll have a quick look back at the week that's been at AB24. We'll check in with the young team and the loanees in Lone Watch. And then after the break, we'll take a look ahead to next Saturday's clash with St Johnstone in the Cinch.
Fucking yes.
But first, Aberdeen 1, Motherwell 0, Saturday the 27th of April, 2024 at Pittodrie Stadium in the Cinch Premiership. One change from last Saturday's tumultuous afternoon at Hampden Park. Junior Hoylett coming in for Duke. No real surprises, I don't think, with that particular decision, Peter leaving.
Yeah, I don't think you can ignore the contributions of Junior Hoylett in that semi-final. I was curious, you know, talked about the workload a lot of these players have gone through, Jamie McGrath, Leighton Clarkson, those kind of guys especially. So I did wonder if you maybe mix up a little bit and get maybe a Duke in the side and get him and Junior Hoylett playing in tandem on the wings, supporting Boyamowski. But I guess Peter Leaven, he's kind of shown he's pretty pragmatic, plays it safe, has a trusted select number of players that he will go with. So yeah, no major surprises here with Junior Hoylett taking the place of Duke.
Yeah, a sun-drenched Pittodrie welcoming the sides, but it was a first-half performance that was played very much in the fashion of a pre-season friendly, shall we say, by both sides. Neither side playing with what appeared to be any real intensity, Aberdeen dominating possession, but failing to create any chances of note. A minor scuffle between Hoylett and O'Donnell on the main stand side was the only thing to raise this particular supporter's heart rate, certainly to one of at least a resting corpse during that first 45 minutes.
Yeah, no, chances at a premium. I think they have an effort that Kelleher saves. Boyamowski tries his damnedest to get on the end of a Jack McKenzie cross that would have been a pretty spectacular finish on par with Zlatan against England all those years ago. Yeah, very much one-paced, two teams going through the motions. Aberdeen showing signs of an intent to keep the ball on the ground and play possession-based football and try and build up towards the Motherwell goal. And I think sometimes we did that pretty well. And if anything, we just maybe looked for one pass too many, could have got shots away earlier. So there were some positive signs, I think, in the way that Aberdeen were approaching the game. But yeah, as a viewing spectator in the ground, it was not one that set the pulses racing.
No, halftime 0-0. After the break, the Dons kind of really starting to to dominate proceedings first. Angus McDonald having a lashed effort headed off the line by Miller. I say headed off the line, just basically smashed him straight in the coupon. Before then, the home side were handed the further initiative with the sending off of Vale McKenzie, getting a lash to the Steens from the well midfielder. And amazingly, for once, VAR failed to overturn the on-field decision of a straight red card. Aberdeen making their numerical advantage pay almost instantly. Hoylett with a corner in from the main stand side. Gartenman sneaking in just ahead of McDonald. And the Dane produced a fine header, glancing off the far post and in to give the Dons the lead. Devlin then with a golden chance from a basically a carbon copy opportunity just 6 minutes later before Aberdeen should have doubled the lead on 6 to 8 minutes. A masterful counter-attack orchestrated by Leighton Clarkson deep in his own half after some tricky footwork to evade three Motherwell players. The Englishman found Hoylett, who in turn fed Miovsky, but his clipped effort just drifted wide of Kelly's post. What is it with Boyan Miovsky and Liam Kelly? He fucking loves trying to chip that guy.
He does love trying to chip that guy. I mean, the thing about that chance is that Boyan goes with his left foot, and obviously that's his favoured foot. But we know Boyan Miovsky can score goals with his right peg. I think if he goes with his right in this one, then he has a much better chance of scoring. It was a little bit, the ball from Hoylett was a little bit heavy, took him a little bit too wide. And yeah, obviously just couldn't resist it. Last chance to get one over this absolute fud of a goalkeeper.
Absolutely. Baron off for Duke, Jensen on for McKenzie. Shortly afterwards, after that, Don's pretty comfortable, to be fair. Chances going a begging for Gartenman, for Miovsky, for Duke and Hoylett as well, before Esther Sokler came in for Miovsky with minutes left. And little said about the opportunity that fell to Esther Sokler in the dying embers of the game. But full time, 1-0. Possession 60% to 40% in favour of Aberdeen. Shots 23 to 8. And I think I know a manager who would like that stat. Shots on target 5 to 3. Expected goals 2.23 for Aberdeen to 0.41 for the visitors. Balls remaining for Jack McKenzie 1.5. Gav, a big win in the context of just where we are in the league at present. A third win in our last five in the league. Unbeaten in that run as well. A fourth clean sheet in five league games as well. I mean, fucking football's a simple game, isn't it?
It's not too shabby right now. It's not great, but it's not too shabby. And I mean, I can't have been the only one looking at that fixture list when it came out for the split, thinking that someone somewhere was trying to set up a last day shootout between Ross County and Aberdeen. So to know that we've got this win was by no means pretty, but we got it, and results have gone pretty much perfectly elsewhere for us, securing our Scottish Premiership status in all but the mathematics in my mind. And hopefully now we can just kind of not necessarily rest on our laurels, but kind of almost enjoy the remaining part of the season.
Well, I don't know if enjoy is the way I'd go with it, but
well, you know, I mean, maybe more a case of like some of these guys having a chance to showcase their skills to the new manager without the pressure of a relegation battle.
Well, we'll come up talking maybe a little bit about that in a minute or two, but as you quite rightly put it, with the results elsewhere, we haul ourselves up into the giddy heights of eighth place, leapfrogging Motherwell. We're now seven clear of St Johnstone, eight clear of Ross County in the playoff spot. I think it's fair to say now that any lingering doubts that there may have been about being dragged into 10th are now alleviated. I think mathematically we need another three from somewhere between now and the end of the season to be mathematically secure. But I just don't see either of those two teams now if we overturning those gaps.
If we beat St Johnstone on Saturday, that'll be 10 points, three games to go. Job done.
We touched on it earlier on. First half, a real nothing game. Perhaps maybe no surprise on our side given the exertions at Hampden last week. Can make it, you know, you can see why we might have been a little bit leggy. The second half performance was certainly a lot better. I mean, you can see why Motherwell have got one of the worst defensive records in the league. They were pretty shambolic in that second half, it's fair to say. And our cause was helped further by that red card to Vale. A lot of discourse since Saturday from the Motherwell camp, it's fair to say, about that incident. But in the current game, it feels like there's no doubt that that had to be a red card.
So yes, Motherwell have opted to appeal this red card to the SFA, and their manager, Stuart Kettlewell, had some interesting observations to make, and I don't want to be accused of misrepresenting Stuart Kettlewell's words, so I'm just going to read them verbatim for a wee moment here.
So just for a minute, this is from Count Fuckula himself.
So for me, it's laughable. Jack McKenzie comes steaming into Jack Vale. I thought it might have been our foul. Now, if you've ever watched Jack McKenzie, he rarely steams in anywhere. And this is not one of those occasions when he does. Unless Connor Goldson is, you know, way to take a ball into the corner flag. of Ibrox. I'm not sure the Aberdeen player has got any place in that vicinity when our player has won the ball and hooked it over his shoulder. And he actually comes charging in, doesn't decelerate at any point, comes heading into Jack Vale and spins him around. We will put a still on it and say his leg is straight and all that nonsense. He has got to the ball first. I don't know if he's talking about Jack McKenzie or Jack Vale there. I think you have to check up when you see the Motherwell player has made the contact with the ball. But you see the ref's reaction. We actually had the same reaction for a penalty awarded against us when they take no time whatsoever to stop and think, maybe communicate with the assistants just to see if they're seeing the right thing. And when he brandishes the red card, we all know VAR is not going to turn it over. I've seen lots of red cards overturned by VAR and vice versa. Mm-hmm. I can only tell you my gut feeling, and people will see it different ways. My first reaction was just to start laughing. I couldn't believe it was given us a red card. Neither can the players. Now, from where I was stood in the red shed, it very much looked like Jack Vale attempted a amateur castration of Jack McKenzie via the studs on his right foot. Winning the ball, if he even did, which I'm not convinced he did either, is immaterial when we're talking about a waist-high, both feet off the ground, studs first tackle, Mr. Kettlewell. Bobby Soggy Biscuits brought Stuart Kettlewell's demeanour to our attention because he's never put me up nor down. I don't remember Stuart Kettlewell at all as a player. I think he was a midfielder, and I think that's acquired Football Manager knowledge, nothing more, nothing less. When he was county manager, pretty inoffensive. Motherwell, so far to date.
I tell you what was offensive, his hairline.
Well, you know, the man is cosplaying a very, very old, very haggard David De Gea. But now I'm so almost concerned for the well-being of a proud, historic Scottish Premiership club that appears to be in the hands of a madman. Because there's no way anything that he just said is even remotely close to being correct. It is the most stonewall, blatant, obvious red card I can think of seeing in quite some time at Pittodrie, and I'm sure I could come up with some other options.
Yeah, I don't think you're
what
too
a fucking helmet. Honest to God.
My favourite was the one when he was banging on about how the referee was brandishing yellow cards left, right and centre all game on Saturday, and it's like, there was one yellow card issued in the entire game, and it went to Stephen Gartenman.
Well, the National, which I'm quoting this from, has omitted to mention the part where he refers to Craig Napier, the referee, as sprinting, a la an Olympic sprinter, to make the red card. And if you watch the highlights via the SPFL channel, you will see that Craig Napier, not even a power walk.
No, he's not. Just out for a Sunday stroll. Yeah, lovely stuff all round. Almost like a man who knows he's probably going to be sacked by this time next year. Just going to say.
Astounding stuff. Bobby was right this whole time.
He's an absolute roaster, it's fair to say. Not Bobby. Sure, Kettlewell, obviously. Looking back on the game again now, those of you who listen in regularly will know that we always have a look at upcoming opponents and their records regarding goals conceded, phases of play that they concede from, etc., etc., etc. So Motherwell, as we highlighted in the preview last week, with the worst record in the league in terms of conceding goals from set plays, and Aberdeen, once again this season, we've done it on a number of occasions now this season, capitalised on that. Gartenman with his second of the season against the Steelmen. Fine header from the Dane.
Yeah, the delivery from set pieces was markedly improved in comparison to recent times. And I thought
Graham Shinney's not taking it in swinging corners, you mean?
Which is curious when we have the options we do have, but that's a topic for Neil Warnock and Peter Lee and Dancer too. And it was just, how vital is it that you get the goal early on after the red card? Because we see teams when they realise the situation they're in, when they get their shape correct, it can be very difficult to break them down. So, you know, we'd missed a good chance with Angus McDonald's volley and then Leighton Clarkson's follow-up. And yeah, Junior Hoyle was putting good balls all day from corner kicks. And yeah, it's a very, very good header from Stephen Gartenman. I must admit, in the stand as well, it seemed to move a little bit in slow motion. And I wasn't quite sure when the ball hit the net, but very good header. Obviously, if he's not scoring, Miofsky's there to tap the ball in as well. So plenty of players in the box. Good delivery. All makes it a lot easier to score from set pieces than some of the stuff we've been doing in the past couple of years. Yeah, very good header from Stephen Gartman.
Yeah, absolutely. On Gartman, again, we talked about Gartman after the semi-final last week. He had a good game there. Thought he played well again in the main on Saturday. Not overly tested. But he does seem to have come back onto a game in recent weeks, certainly since playing alongside Angus McDonald. Are you still in the same place, though, that you were last week, that it's just perhaps that little bit too late for your views on him to have changed?
I think with Gartman, I think on the whole, he did play well. I think he dealt with the physical challenge that Theo Bear posed pretty well on the whole. Still very slow, still very ponderous in possession, which is concerning to you, especially when teams are trying to press you high up the pitch. But yeah, he did play well. I mean, I still think for me, it's a case of I've seen too much of the opposite from Stephen Gartman. I think it would be a big call for the new manager coming in to go for the outlay that I assume we would have to go for to bring Stephen Gartman into the club, considering the number of positions I think will need to be reviewed and replaced. If it works out financially for the club, it's not a huge chunk of money. Maybe Jimmy Tolin will see something that he can work with. But for me right now, I think I'm still on the side of Stefan's had a year on loan and let's move on from there.
Connor Barron, Dante Povara, probably the standout players I thought on Saturday for us. Barron with two really good performances now in the space of a week at Hampden and then against Motherwell. Povara, I thought he played well. Again, I thought we got to just see what he brings to midfield. Any coincidence, though, certainly on the Barron one, that both of those performances for him arrive with the absence of Graeme Shinnie?
Probably not. What I like about Connor Barron in the last couple of games is that he's very much playing within, I don't know, like a 20 by 20 yard space on the pitch, and he doesn't really tend to abandon that spot between the midfield and the defence, and he's just that constant player who will recycle the ball and get the ball moving through the lines. Yeah, I was pretty impressed with him. I have to be honest. It's been a frustrating time being an Aberdeen fan watching Connor Barron, because we know how much more we probably could have got out of him, but for injuries and contract situations and managers, you know, maybe throwing the toys out the pram because of the aforementioned contractual situation, we haven't seen as much from him. Yeah, he seems to take that position very, very well when he's just allowed to go and do it. And as for Dani Povar, I mean, I think it was a little bit of a slow start, but once he got into the game, he had the beating of his man. I love this move he has where he just takes the ball in and then just gets his body in front, using his physicality very well. I just think he continues to get better and better. And I look forward, as I've said before, to him being a integral mainstay of the first team next season.
Yeah, Povara certainly for me strikes me as being the kind of player that I think Jimmy Tolin will like. I think he could really fit into that system on the presumption that Tolin comes and puts in place a system which mirrors what he's been doing at Elfsborg in place. I think Povara has a real opportunity there to really make a name for himself in that sort of team. Fairly quiet afternoon for Bojan Miloski, no real service to him, to be fair. Højlund certainly our most threatening player in the second half. Pretty quiet first half, but everybody did. Some chat around in the news today about Højlund being keen to see if he could extend his deal here at Aberdeen. If there was room in the budget for him, would you be tempted to offer Højlund another 12-month deal? Or do you feel, as I kind of feel, he maybe doesn't necessarily suit Tolin's style?
From what we've been told, and by that I mean what you've told me about Jimmy Tolin and Elfsborg and the way that he sets his teams up, I'm not necessarily sure that he'd be like a first pick in the team. He'd maybe be a good option to have off the bench, but does that work for Junior Højlund? And does that really work for Aberdeen, given the money I would assume he'd be looking for to be that option in the first team for us?
I was going to say, Tolin likes to use wingers, so there's there's a tick in the box there, and he likes to try and create opportunities from the wide areas, and Højlund is probably our most threatening and naturally gifted winger from that perspective in a long, long time, in terms of the quality of ball he can put into the box. Absolutely. We've seen that over the last few weeks in particular. But at the same time, Tillian needs his wingers who play in those positions to be kind of quite high energy, and they're going to be involved in a lot of the high pressing activities, which is not where you see Højlund necessarily excelling, it's fair to say.
Yeah, that's what my thinking is, and that's why I think he might be a very good option to have off the bench when, you know, a winger's playing that style of football has maybe like run himself into the ground, and then, you know, we can maybe capitalize from there. But whether that would work for Junior Højlund, I don't know, and whether that would really work for us, I don't know. I mean, I go back and forth on him a lot because, you know, his quality is undoubted and his career, you know, tells you that. And he's has some good performances for Aberdeen, and he's had some middling to not so good performances. I think, again, I tend to lean on the idea that Junior Højlund was obviously a pretty short-term move backing the old manager in spite of our data and bringing them all in from abroad. I would tend to say that, yeah, Junior Højlund's time will probably be over in the summer.
Tend to probably think that might be the case as well. All in all, I mean, ultimately what mattered on Saturday was getting another 3 points on the board. We talked about earlier on. It's what we managed to do with results elsewhere. It pretty much wraps the season up. It's not necessarily been pretty under Leaven in terms of style, although there were moments obviously at Hampden last week that were good. We've certainly become a lot more secure defensively, though, under Leaven. And as I wrote the notes up for this on Sunday morning, we were actually the form team in the league at that point, 11 points from our last five games. Considering the five games prior to Leaven taking over for the second time had seen us take 2 points from them, which made us the most out of form side in the league, other than Livingston. It's quite a swing to go from that kind of relegation trajectory that we were on to one that a side battling for Europe would be happy with at this moment in time. You can't really understate, I don't think, the job that Peter Leaven's done in this such a short space of time with the same group of players.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that it's been a weird season as a supporter for many, many reasons, obviously. But, you know, when January came around and Bio Robson was eventually dismissed, you know, you have a lot of fans saying that we're underperforming, we've got a really good group of players. And then Warnock comes in and changes the narrative where the players are complete shit and there's nothing you can do about it. And suddenly it's all the players and it's the recruitment. And then, you know, Peter Leaven comes in for about a month or so, and we're now talking about, you know, Danny Povar putting in great performances, Connor Barron, you know, coming out of his shell, Gartman finding some form, you know, Miofsky started scoring again. So, I mean, I think that he has come into an extremely difficult situation and done extremely well. And what I like the fact that we've identified that he will be part of the coaching setup, but I'm also not ignoring the chat that the work he's done at Aberdeen has caught the eye of clubs down south, and it would not shock me if he's maybe if clubs get offer him the chance to then go ahead and be his own man, and that's obviously up for Peter Leaven to decide. I think he's been a credit to himself.
Yeah, I just don't think it could be understated at all, the turnaround in just 5-6 games that we've seen from him. And as you quite rightly say, he inherited an absolute mess when he came back in for the second time, and like I say, league form wise we were headed in one direction. I'm pretty certain that if Warnock had still been here, we would have been heading for that 11th spot right by now. It does make you just think, if they'd kept Leaving in there instead of the whole Warnock pish, I think we probably would have made top six. And you're in that top six at the moment. You've got an outside chance at Europe. And if we'd been able to rescue a fifth place finish, I think, this season and got ourselves into Europe, all things considered, with the way that the season's panned out, that would have been quite an achievement, I think, actually, to have got to that position. I'm not saying a team like Aberdeen should be aiming for a fifth place finish, but with where we were at the point at the point in particular when Robson left, I think a fifth place finish would have been, you know, hailed as being a success, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't want to be accused of revising my view of the Leaven Warnock situation, because I was very much in favor of giving it to a short-term manager, and perhaps thinking that it didn't necessarily make sense to go from an inexperienced manager to an even more inexperienced manager when there was so much left to play for. I don't know why the board did it, but hindsight's a wonderful thing, and we can all say that we made a disastrous decision in appointing Neil Warnock. And yeah, with hindsight and seeing what he's done post the Warnock apocalypse, I think it's perfectly legitimate to say that we'd be almost definitely a top six side. And then, yeah, like you say, where you go from there is anyone's to speculate. Yeah, like I say, he's done a very, very good job. And I really do hope he will still be here next season.
Yeah. I don't know if you listened to it on the way home from Pataudry on Saturday. Quite a lot of awfully contrived chat once again on BBC Sports Sound, in particular between Mikey Stewart and Tom English about the Jimmy Tilleen situation. But I'm interested just to get your take on this again. You know, given that says now, let's just say safe. I was going to say given the run that Elfsborg are on, but they won earlier tonight when we were before we recorded against Why So Serious FC by 2-0. But would you? And we've been chatting back to Glenn Hovick, who we had on for the Jimmy Tilleen episode when we spoke about it. Certainly some Elfsborg fans, I think, are starting to get to the point where I thought this might happen anyway, where they're kind of the view of why is he still here? And they run the risk of kind of torpedoing their entire season before they even get up and running. Given we're kind of relatively safe now, I mean, would you like to see the stops being pulled out to get Tilleen in the door for the next 3 or 4 games? Not even if he's going to be the manager for these 3 or 4 games, even if he takes a back seat and he's just there, maybe takes training, but let's leave and still take the team for the games, just so he can get eyes properly on the team and see from a squad perspective who he fancies for next season and who he doesn't fancy, because a big chunk of these boys are contracted to be here next season.
So I was thinking about this today, knowing that we were going to record, and my question to you is, do you know what is the holdup?
Well, as far as I understand out, the holdup is now literally just because they'd all agreed 1st of June.
So Elfsborg have got their new manager ready to go?
Aalborg, so the his name has now completely disappeared from me. Oscar, whatever his name is, has left Aalborg. He left them 2 weeks ago there. His assistant is currently taking Aalborg through to the end of their season. So he's gone. So he is ready to join up at Elfsborg if they want him. So it's all very curious. I don't really know anymore what the holdup is.
So my answer to this question, and I was thinking about it, and from the Aberdeen perspective, it doesn't really bother me, because I think I would rather at the stage just leave Peter Leaven in charge for the remaining 4 games. I'm sure that between Jimmy Tilleen and his 2 assistants, they are very keen observers of what's going on, and they'll be seeing, I'm sure they can get footage from training, and they'll have a very good idea of who's going to fit into their vision for Aberdeen in the coming seasons. But from Elfsborg's perspective, it doesn't make any sense to me. I cannot imagine how annoyed I would be if, you know, our manager on the 1st of August decided to take a job with another team, but was going to hang around for another month. Obviously, like, they're in a league where if they want to go ahead and win the Allsvenskan, they've got very little room for error, because Malmo are such a dominant side. They've gotten off to a bad start. And from Jimmy Tilleen's perspective, I'm kind of like, does this kind of, in a way, tarnish his legacy at Elfsborg? And for maybe some Aberdeen fans out there who perhaps are more hesitant than you or I, does it take the shine off him a little bit, being the manager of a team who were in pretty poor form to the beginning of their Swedish league title season?
I mean, on the last point, I'm not too bothered by it, because Elfsborg have lost a few players in the intervening period between last season and this season. Who were quite critical, I think it's probably fair to say, to the run they've been on the last couple of seasons. So Elfsborg probably feel like they're a team in transition a little bit as well, which is probably also maybe why it makes sense in Tilleen's head to maybe think about leaving Elfsborg, because he probably feels like he's gone as far as he can go with them to a certain extent. But I agree with you, though, about the premise about if the shoe was under the foot here, I would be absolutely fucking raging if we were, yeah, as you say, a matter of minutes into the opening stages of our season, and the guy he's already agreed to take a job elsewhere, he's going to hang around for like 3 months. Like, those 3 months could make or break Elfsborg's season. Like, they've got European football to look forward to as well.
I would propose that, yeah, it's the old adage that, you know, you're not going to win the league title in the first month, but you can easily lose it, especially in a league where the team like Malmo are as dominant. So yeah, no. It doesn't make sense from their perspective, as far as I'm concerned, nor his. From Aberdeen, which is obviously my priority, kind of doesn't really bother me.
But from a timing perspective for Aberdeen, it doesn't really work either, because 1st of June, right? So our season finishes on the 19th of May. We finish off against Ross County on the 19th of May. Players will then depart on holiday on the 20th. Jimmy Tilleen starts on the 1st.
Yes.
So there's going to be no fucking around anyway when he starts. Like, it's not even though he gets straight in and the boys are there and we're ready to rock and roll. It's like the timing's just really curious about the whole thing. I mean, now we're into May. Now it becomes a case of, well, is it okay to wait 4 weeks? And it practically becomes it is. But it's just a, I don't know. I would like to have seen him in just to get eyes properly. I think you can do all the analysis you want on video screens and everything. I think though you'd want to have eyes properly on the team. And I know they'll be in consultation with Levin and co, but I don't know. I just think it'd be a better fit all around if they could come in and just at least try and get a look at some of these players ahead of the transfer window, ahead of the preseason campaign getting up and running.
I can entirely see the merit, but yeah, I wouldn't be doing anything additional to what we've already done to get him in any earlier, given that I think we're in very safe hands.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how delicious were Liam Kelly's tears on Saturday?
They were as delicious as it was curious that this motherfucker was time-wasting when his team were 1-0 down.
He's a very odd goalkeeper.
He's fucking rubbish as well.
He is terrible.
Guy's got a Scotland cap.
I've still got a chance. To be fair, with the current injury crisis enveloping the Scottish national team, he could very well be lining up in midfield for the opening game against Germany. Special shout out to Stephen O'Donnell for play of the season when he absolutely shanked a pass straight out of the pitch. Amazing scenes. Loved it.
Well, see, the curious thing about that is that I wasn't sure which time you're talking about. Because he did it twice.
You know which one I mean. I'm talking about the one where the ball broke out from a corner and he tried to play
a switchy cross ball. He switches it back and he puts it straight into the south stand. But yeah, I think in the second half, he also just absolutely fucking leathered one into the main stand. So... again, he's a funny motherfucker as well.
Yeah.
I know he's got a real chip on his shoulder about Aberdeen because we let him go when he was a kid, but I mean...
That's because he's shite.
Every time we play him, I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy also has Scotland caps.
Yeah. But to be fair, he did... Caps, plural. And again, with the current injury crisis enveloping the right-back slot.
However, I will put some respect on the fact that he did absolutely body Jack Grealish, so I'll give you that one, Stephen. But again, you were fucking murder.
Yep. A final get it right down to Stuart Kettle. Never has such a non-entity in the Scottish game, I don't think, had such an air of self-importance. So it's definitely pleasing to see that his side have failed to register a win against an Aberdeen side who have been, it's fair to say, honking for the vast majority of this campaign. So big thumbs up for you, Stuartie boy.
Something about the coaching staff at Motherwell.
Oh, Ricky Foster's there, wasn't he?
Neil Alexander. The goalkeeping coach. Back in the day, they've had some peculiar folk.
Indeed.
My fave, Leechie Boy.
Leechie Boy, that's it. Absolutely. Right, let's wrap that one up. Top Don.
I thought Danny Pulvar was superb.
What is for you? I just said Conor Barron. I thought he was excellent. Latest news from AB24. Not an awful lot, really, in the week that's gone. Thursday night, obviously, saw the annual Player of the Year dinner where you can make your favourite player deeply uncomfortable for a large chunk of the evening. Sadness in their eyes, etc. But when all was said and done, Alfie Babbage picking up Development Player of the Year for a second year in the trot, Maddie Finney picking up the Women's Young Player of the Year award, 24-year-old Jack McKenzie picked up the men's equivalent. Gav?
I think J.O. Grassman robbed.
What does Graeme Shinney have to do to get a Young Player of the Year award?
I've got to say, I don't think Jack had his best game on Saturday, so I don't know if he maybe just had.
Of course,
maybe
he didn't. One... He was fucking castrated halfway through it.
Prior to that,
playing with your balls, maybe one or two of your fucking ankles,
maybe one or two too many Werther's Originals and episodes of Columbo for Jack.
Men's Players Player of the Year, Bojan Miłowski. Ailey Shore with the women's iteration for the fourth year on the spin. Hannah Stewart, goal of the season for the women's side. Her goal versus Spartans, picking up the vast majority of votes in the online poll. And Angus McDonald's Thunder Bastard in the snow in Helsinki, getting the votes on the men's section.
Yes, richly deserved.
It was class. That was one of my, honestly, highlights of the season, just because of the fact that as soon as it left his foot from the angle we were in, it's like, oh, that's it. That's... And it was in that fancy bright orange and green luminous green ball. Class.
Just stuff came like right off his blue Skechers.
Yeah. Beautiful. And I was pissed that it was fucking great. And I'd been hallucinating watching Papi Habib Gay for 45 minutes. After our manager insisting the night before we were taking this one deadly serious. Where were we? Bailey Hutchison winning Women's Player of the Year award. No surprises with that one, I don't think. That the women's goal machine was also matched on the men's side by the men's goal machine, Bojan Miljovski, picking up his second award of the evening as well. I don't think there's any major surprises in that one, Gav, I don't think.
Other than OAP Jack McKenzie picking up Young Player of the Year.
Well done, everybody.
Well done, everyone.
And well done to the first team squad for somehow managing to get out the evening with their sensibilities intact. Well, mainly.
Shame or daddy, I wasn't there.
Just picking up his Lifetime Achievement Award. Sponsored by Silk Cut.
Taking it to the local Costco.
Where are we? Alone Watch. Kieran Aguena, Park Thistle. He played the full 90 minutes as Park Thistle drew 0-0 with Ayr United at Firhill in the Championship. Dylan Lobin at 4 for Athletic, and a new sub as 4 for Beach Stranraer by 2 goals to 0 in League 2. Alfie Stewart started and supplied the assist for Peterhead's opener as the Blue Toon drew 2-2 with Spartans in League 2. Jaden Richardson, an unused sub, as Colchester United drew 1-1 with Crewe Alexandra to redeem their League 2 status, as Rob Milsom's Sutton United took the drop to the National League. Anthony Stewart at the Milton Keynes Dons. Yeah, sit down, not in the squad, 4-4 draw with Sutton United. I love how childish you find that, which is great. What was I going to do? Vicente Bejewin.
I can tell you, I've got it right in front of me. They won 3-0 tonight versus Hellman Sport, and Vinny got the third.
He did get the third.
Getting a nice wee run of form towards the end of the season.
Excellent. Maybe Jimmy Tilleen might like wingers. And then where else were we? Oh yes, Pape Habiugay started, played the full 90 minutes, was booked as well as Christiansen drew 2-2 with Storm Godset in the Elite season. So there we go. I've now just taken it as read that the players who were out with the likes of Kelly Hearts and Edinburgh City are now back at Pittodrie because they are getting ready for Wednesday night's Youth Cup final at Hampden Park for the young team. Big 3-1 win for them on Friday night over Hibs. The Dons now 2 points behind Kilmarnock in the Cass under 18 with a game in hand. I think there's 3 or 4 games remaining for the Dons, so it's very much in the young team's hands. They can win the league and cup double, all things going well. So all the best to the boys at Hampden Park on Wednesday evening. I think it is live on one of the BBC Sports channels as well. So if you can't make it to Hampden, you can watch it there. And if the Quines no game this weekend, they have the visit of Montrose to Pittodrie on Tuesday evening. And I think that there's no point in me trying to advertise that because this show will go out presumably after that has happened. So there.
Either that or within minutes of kickoff.
Yes. So all the best. And if you can, get along, but you'll hear this too late to make a decision for you anyway. So fuck it. There we go. Well, that's just now.
Yes, thank you.
Lovely stuff. Join us after the break. We'll have a quick chat about Craig Levein's St Johnstone coming to Pittodrie for the third time this season. Had me fucking back.
Yes.
Looking for the best donuts in the northeast of Scotland? Look no further than Dough & Co. Made fresh every day and topped right in front of you at their 40-seater cafe on Belmont Street in the heart of Aberdeen. They make the perfect gift or the perfect pre-match stop-off with a full selection of bagels and hot and cold drinks. If you're listening from home, why not place your order for one of their Dough & Co. stops? There are over 28 drop-off locations across the region, delivering through the northeast on a weekly basis. Follow at Your Donut Shop across socials to stay up to date. Come on, you Reds. Welcome back to the ABZ Football Podcast. Quick shout out to those of you who continue to make your donations to the Beer and Coffee Fund. It's much appreciated. If you'd like to buy us that beer or coffee, please head on over to ko-fi.com/ABZ Football Podcast. The link is in the description. It is much appreciated. Gav, how excited are you for this one on Saturday?
Under normal circumstances, the visit of St Johnstone brings dread, panic, anxiety. Typically the visit of any Craig Levein side does the same, and you know the memory is still very fresh of the absolute doing that they did give us in the not too distant past. But given their recent form, given what was on the line for Aberdeen, I'm actually looking forward to this one.
Wow. Wowzers.
We've already seen off a couple of grade A roasters this season at Pittodrie. Neil Warnock and Stuart Kettlewell. Let's make another one.
Absolutely. Right, let's get on it quickly. So the Perth Saints making their third trip north to Pittodrie on Saturday afternoon at Dons, having failed to score in the previous two meetings, a 0-0 draw back in October, followed up by the Saints picking up what was at the time only their second win away from home back in February. A 2-0 win for the visitors as the wheels continued to fall off Neil Warnock's clown car. Saturday will be the 77th meeting of the sides at Pittodrie in the league. Aberdeen with 35 wins to date. That's a win percentage of 46%, 23 draws and 18 wins for the visitors. 183 goals scored between the sides in the fixture over the years, that average out at 2.4 goals per game, which seems 2.4 goals way too many from my recollection. But there we go.
Well, you've also got to factor in, you know, like that 5-0 scud in the Yales a few years back.
That's true. Yes, absolutely. It's always good to be just brought back down to earth with a bump sometimes, isn't it?
Nothing does it better than a Brian Easton volley from 30 yards out.
Yeah, sailing over Danny Ward's head. Oh, absolute fucking scenes. Anyway, we talked about it earlier on. Aberdeen currently one of the in-form sides in the league. Saints will come into this one on Saturday as one of the most out-of-form sides in the division. Just one win in their last six. A 3-1 defeat at Hibs last time out, which sees Saints remain just 1 point above Ross County. That was a big opportunity missed as well for the Saints last weekend with County losing at Livingston, wasn't it?
Yep, 100%. That's why I say it's going into this game feeling good about where we are as a team off the back of some more recent performances and results. And it feels like St Johnstone are the team that are not necessarily sleepwalking, more like sleep sprinting into oblivion. I could very easily see them being the team that take that 11th place.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I honestly, there's a game, I think it might be, is it the second last game of the season? I think is St Johnstone Ross County, which feels like that might be the game that decides who will end up in 11th spot. Now, we touched on it earlier on, Craig Levein came in to replace Callum Davidson in November. It's fair to say that Levine's appointment hasn't really had the desired effect. He's just had 6 wins in his 24 games in charge, 12 defeats in that time as well. So 50% of the games have been lost. Saints with the third worst record in the league away from home, just 13 points gathered from their 16 games on the road. And they are the lowest goal scorers away from home as well in the league. Only 9 scored away from Perth, and 22.2% of them came in their last visit to Pittodrie. So there you go. Who says we're not fucking charitable, Aberdonians? Eh? Goal scoring, I feel like every time we've spoken about St Johnstone on the show since we started, we see that goals are the big problem for them, and it still remains to be the case this season. Only 25 scored across the league campaign to date. That's the second lowest in the division. Only Livingston have scored less, and even then, it's only by 1 goal. And how shite have Livingston been in front of goal this season?
Very. Very.
Speaking about Livingston and strikers, what's happened to Bruce Anderson's accent?
I couldn't tell you. Should I know this?
Oh, have you not seen it? There's a clip of him. You know, you're going to find it now. You clip him on BBC after the game on Saturday where they're talking about, because Davey Martindale's talking about it's probably time for a wee Brucey to go. Bruce Anderson's brought out. And Bruce Anderson doesn't have the accent of a boy raised in Banff, let's put it that way.
What does a boy raised in Banff sound like?
Not what Bruce Anderson
sounds like. No. Okay, fair enough. I probably won't check that out later. But
feels not. Like he's gone native, it's probably fair to say.
I see.
It'd be the best way I could describe it.
But back amongst the goals.
I just had it. I had a real doubt in my head there that he was from Banff, but he is. So that's fine. Where were we? Yes, of the 25 goals that St Johnstone have scored in the league this season, 15 from open play against an open play expected goals of 14. So they are about right on that one. One penalty, 1-1 goal leaves them a balance of 8 from set plays against a set play expected goals of 9.6. So again, pretty much there or thereabouts. So they're not missing loads of chances. But you can see that expected goals of 17.5 from open plays by some distance.
So what you're saying is that their strikers are ruthless in front of goal when they get the chances.
Well, they're putting away the chances that they should be putting away.
Fair fucks.
So, you know, there you go. They're just not making any.
Top scorer, Nicky Clark, with 6.
Yes.
Had me back.
Benjamin Kempioka on 3. But they both scored against us in February.
So. I remember the days of strikers of ours with 6 goals after 34 league games. Good times.
Yeah, lovely stuff. This will come as a real shock to you that Craig Levine doesn't really appear to know what his best 11 is or what his best shape is. He's literally played in the last few weeks with a 3-5-2, a 4-4-2, a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1, and then he went with a 3-1-4-2 against Hibs on Saturday. That was a back three of McGowan, Gordon and Constantine. I think it's fair to say if you put the ball over the top of that, you might have chances. That's all I'm going to say. So who knows what he's going to come north with. I've got no idea.
I mean, God bless Bankery's favourite son, but especially if you go on the left side of that defence.
Yeah, absolutely. County, you've got Hibs at home on Saturday. So
I have the fixtures right here. Yes, Ross County at Hibs and Livingston away to Motherwell.
Yeah. So, well, it doesn't matter what Livingston are doing, let's be honest.
Hey, picked up that first one.
Do you think the comeback's on?
9 points.
It would be pretty funny, I must admit, if somehow Livingston just decided, you know what, maybe we should start trying.
Well, the thing about it is, for me, is like, I think Livingston, in all the time I've watched them, be it against ourselves or against other teams, I've never seen any evidence of them giving up. They've always carried on at it. And I think that's the same of Ross County. They'll be disappointed with the result against Livingston, of course, but they're still fighting. St Johnstone are the team where I just look at them and just think they're out of ideas, have limited talent as it is anyway, and just feels to me that they're almost giving up. So that's why I can see, I think the escape is probably too big for Livingston. But yeah, I can definitely see our counterparts on Saturday being the team that fall into that 11th place finish.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I think Livy are done. Let's be quite honest about it. But as we just touched on there, County, you've got Hibs at home next Saturday, and Hibs are like so hit and miss. You don't know what sort of team you're going to get. County's home form in recent weeks has been good. So there's every possibility the County pick up at least a point, possibly 3. St Johnstone do need to come here to try to win the game. A point's no fucking use to them anymore, is it? Let's be quite honest.
I would tend to agree, but then I remember who their manager is, and I'm just astounded that we haven't seen his patented trademark formation. So I'm wondering if he's going to bring that to Pittodrie on Saturday and maybe go with the old 4-6-0 approach. The innovator of the false nine, Craig Levine. It's where I'd play Stevie May anyway.
He certainly is the false nine in the sense of it just doesn't fucking exist. It's great. Love it. Fake nine. It'll shock you this. St Johnstone in the lower reaches of the league in terms of passing play or build-up play. Upper reaches of when it comes to chucking the ball up long. Who says a leopard never changes its spots, eh?
Yeah, that's not surprising in the least.
No.
The only thing I'm shocked is that he's not playing Kevin McKenna up top.
Well, this is absolutely true. Definitely. Like most teams in the league, they are definitely happy to sit in when out of possession. PPD of 14.2 indicates that Saints are the second least likely team in the league to press you when out of possession.
But I think PPD goes out the window when you're playing Aberdeen, because I remember St Johnstone harrying us like fuck when we played them Dodgery last. Your man Phillips in the midfield
played well.
Maybe aided by the fact that Aberdeen midfielders didn't do all that well, but yeah, he was all over us as well. So those two really fast strikers they had just going over the top. Jokes aside, I mean, they'll present their own challenge. Levine teams always do. St. Johnstone always do, regardless of form. But I think we're in a good place, and I just don't see any positivity or belief emanating from McDermott Park. I think there's a real chance here to get the win, mathematically seal it, and in the process put St Johnstone into the shit.
Predictions then, Gav. Come on then.
4-0, Aberdeen.
Ooh, you are. Ooh. Gav's gone giddy with
that record book.
Under the clean sheet.
About to get flipped up. Yeah, we're solid as fuck now.
Yeah. This isn't that long ago since the boy Kempioka was just like rampaging through, like with apparently no fucking anywhere near him. Back in February.
Yes. I mean, if Stephen Garter and Angus Bedal, if that happened, they could just like continue running. That would be good. Yeah. But I don't see them presenting the same kind of problems they did that game. double from Bojemjovski, Dani Pulvara to get his, to break his Scottish domestic football duck, and then Richard Jensen fourth.
Curveball at the end. I'm not going to go quite as dramatic. I'm going to say Aberdeen 2, St Johnstone 0, just comfortable. Just no fuss. Done and dusted. Bojemjovski double. There we go. Happy days. Right, that'll do us, I think. What?
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. That wraps up this week's episode of the ABZ Football Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Please remember to like, subscribe, follow, whatever you do on your podcast player of choice. Join us next time for episode 168, where we'll look back at the visit of St Johnstone to Pittodrie, and we'll look ahead to a final week of banter as the Dons travel to Hibs, await the visit of Livingston, and then head for Dingwall as the cinch wraps up. Look forward to seeing you then. Stand free.
This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast was brought to you in association with Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen. Head into the bar, quote the phrase ABZ Pod, that's ABZ Pod, for a £3 pint of Foster's, £4 pint of Moretti, or £5 pint of Fierce any day of the week, including match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round, and the bar is located only 30 seconds walk from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie Stadium for free on match days. Come on, you Reds.